Yeah, so welcome to this session, this tiny little session. We don't have to make it super formal. These guys are already plenty nervous, so we can calm it down. Come to the front. So this session is going to be presented by Chiho and Morris. Say hi to them. I'll just read their bios a little bit, because they have quite very impressive bios. It's very worth sharing. So Chiho over there. After earning his PhD in statistics from the University of Science and Technology of China in 2001, worked in different places, including University of Hong Kong, University of Amsterdam, Concordia University, University of Iowa, wow, and now also serving as an editor of Journal Insurance under the topics of maths and economics, an associate editor for other journals, applied stochastic modeling in business and industry, and others, very long, elected member of the International Statistical Institute. And he is now at UNSW Sydney, where he holds the position of Research Director of the School of Risk and Actuarial Studies, and also is the co-director of Innovations in Risk Insurance and Superannuation Knowledge Hub. So that's Chiho. I've got here the bio for Morris as well. Morris is a PhD candidate at the School of Risk and Actuarial Studies at UNSW Sydney, so obviously they work together. And he obtained the Bachelor of Actuarial Studies Honours Class 1 and the University Medal. Wow, Morris, I didn't know that. From UNSW in 2020. Sorry, we just met this morning. So his current research interests are in the areas of bankruptcy procedures and climate risk. Wow, there you go. Shall I hand the floor over to both of you to kick off?
One more thing.
They would like questions to come through as they're presenting. You don't have to wait to the end. So feel free to put your questions onto the app anytime during the session, and I can bring it up and point it to either of the speakers. So, sorry. Back to you.
Thanks. Thanks, Evelyn, for a very nice introduction. So thanks, everyone, for coming here. I think you pick the right session. Okay, let's start. So this is my first time to attend the summit. I do enjoy a lot. I feel all talks come from industry perspectives. They talk more on visions. So here, this talk is a little bit different. We are from academia. So not many people come from academia except from UNSW. We have a handful of colleagues here. So this one, we make it a little bit academic. We try to come up with, instead of vision, we come up with the solutions. So this is a joint talk by myself, Chiho Tang here, and Morris, who is my PhD student. So this is a joint work with Payman Asadi, who is working in IAG. Unfortunately, he cannot come here. So let's move on. So this is our line. So here, as I said, we mainly come up with some quantitative solutions. So the talk is based on two motivations, which I'm going to highlight later. So here, the first part, motivation. So there are 2 points. Then we look at the data. Morris will explain data description. So a bit more technical part, don't be scared. Here, univariate extreme value theory. EVT stands for extreme value theory. Multivariate EVT. Finally, we come up with some takeaways. Let's move on. So here, GLM, generalized linear models, are widely applied in general insurance pricing. For example, so here we talk about the house insurance premium. Even though we talk, we use as a case studies for house price premium, the methodologies here are applicable to general insurance pricing. So we are going to convince you. So this is a general form for a generalized linear model. I assume everyone knows here. So mu I is a prediction, something we're going to estimate. So G is a link function, something depending on situation, we put a linked function. The X variables are predictors, are covariates. So whatever you feel are meaningful can be covariates here. I highlight here XI1. So this one we want to assign it to be a region variable. It's a it just like region, which region it is. This turns out to be a key point. So the other variables are whatever you feel relevant, you can put on there. And then we come up with this generalized linear model. I don't go into detail. So this model can be useful to predict severity. and frequency. Severity means if there's a climate event, total loss, so we could use a generalized linear model to estimate. Well, frequency just means the number of catastrophic climate events during a year. So this model, usually, if we have rich data, it works very well. So here, as I highlighted, XI1, which we use to represent region. So the most important factor is the region in house price premium, or in general insurance price, actually. Region plays a very important role here. Now, the question, I think you have much better sense than we from academia. So two identical houses, they are merely separated by a street. If they fall into different regions, so you know, a street divides regions. So it turns out, the premiums to be charged can be significant. Why this happens? The real reason is region, because these two houses, even though geographically are close to each other, they belong to different regions. So this shows in insurance practice, region is an important factor. But this clearly is not reasonable, because we don't have a strong reason to believe these two houses are subject to different risk factors. So then this is one motivation. We are going to come up with a solution to smooth, to give a smooth the price curve. So later on we are going to discuss. Next page.
Just to reflect what Chihe was talking about, I have done a study. So we basically retrieved some quotes from one of the insurers on their house insurance premium, so only for the house buildings insurance premium. So this graph is a plot, so we basically pick 7 points. So what we have done is we assume the houses are all identical except for their location. So in the premium making, as mentioned in the plenary session, materials play an important role, et cetera, et cetera. So we have fixed all these to be the same, as well as like other things, including some insured. They are completely identical. So we also control for other risk factors, so including bushfire and flood, which is mentioned in the plenary session. So after controlling all these variables, the only main contributor to the risk premium is going to be storms. So if you look at the graph, the first thing I want to point at is the legend, actually, rather than the graph itself. So the legend goes from 1600 to 1900. So that's the yearly premium. Yeah, I probably should plot the Sydney region, but this is zoomed in Sydney region, so it's very close to Sydney. Katoomba is basically just on the east of the Blue Mountains, so it's very small region. And you see the premium can differ by $300. That's almost 20% if you think about it. Another thing I want to stress is on the graph itself, although it's just a bit of samples that we obtain, it clearly demonstrates a regional effect. So if we want to see the color, so Katoomba and Bauru, they kind of fall on the same category. Their premium is very close to each other. Narriland and Wilberforce, they have very close premium to each other. They might belong into the same region. Lizero and Wollongong themselves had the lowest premium. It's actually quite interesting since they are actually closer to the coast. And lastly, Sydney by itself, we see a different premium. So basically, we see four groups of different premiums, which are kind of determined by their region. Yeah, I'll hand back to Chihe talking about motivation.
Okay, in this example, storm is a significant determinant of house insurance price premiums. So storm, primary risk factors for losses include precipitation and wind speed. So here, these two are most important risk factors when we consider storm risk. But these two risk factors are strongly region specific. So when we collect the data, it comes from which region is region specific. However, the levels of precipitation and wind speed can't differ significantly for locations that are close to each other, as I highlighted just now. So that means when we take into account reading factor, which is important, but we have to be mindful. So we shouldn't let reading to play too significant a role. So the strange thing can happen, like significant different premiums apply to houses which are close to each other due to their locations in different regions. So therefore, we aim to create a smooth pricing surface. Later on, we're going to show a few diagrams to mitigate the issue of sudden variations in premiums. So the solution we are going to propose is highlighted here, smoothed pricing surface. Move on. The second motivation I like to mention name, Saranji Padam. Last night after the banquet, I checked with him again because I watched your YouTube video somewhere. You did say clearly climate risk is not yet priced in the current insurance practice. I just double checked. I had this sense as well, but I want to double check because you are very authoritative here. Thanks for coming to my session. So I quote your words here. In the current insurance practice, climate risks are not yet priced, but clearly they should be priced. So there are a lot of reasons. I believe who you're sitting here have better sense than me. Just let's move on here. Due to the variability and uncertainty of storms, if we consider storm risk, so it's subject to huge variability and huge uncertainty, I would say deep uncertainty. So there's no advanced storm model to utilize for the insurance market. Just it's hard to have such an advanced model except we do some routine generalized linear model analysis. So there's no advanced model. We do need an advanced model for storm risk. For modeling purposes, insurers mainly rely on claim histories instead of climate risk. So instead of climate risk, so this is the second motivation. We propose climate risk should be taken into account when we do insurance pricing. I understand we are ahead of insurance practice, so that's the research. So we explore whether the use of abundant climate data could improve insurance pricing. So we try to come up with some solutions. This is an ongoing project. We are welcome any comments to improve us. Even we can pursue some collaboration. So our study helps to understand the impact of climate change on insurance pricing. So climate change is just now the plenary session, which is surrounded chaired. So we learn a lot of topics from there. So climate risk should be taken into account when we consider insurance pricing. That's the second motivation. Let's move on. So now, for data description, I pass to Morris to describe.
Sorry for the pointer. It goes two slides at a time sometimes, so sorry for the interruption. So I'm just going to quickly describe the data we have. So we have time series data retrieved from the Australian Bureau of Meteorology. So they have weather records from the weather observatories. We have more than 5,000 climate stations. So I leaked it a little bit, so it's going to be plotted on the next slide. So we want to stress that the records are heterogeneous in nature. So these records are manually taken. We do see differences observed in recorded variables. And there's a difference in record frequency. So at some stations, these records are based on a daily basis, provided on a daily basis. But on the other stations, they have like 3 hourly data. So they are heterogeneous. And also the years of records, since, as I said, these data are from weather stations, and weather stations move, weather stations can close and open at different times. That's why the years of records are different. I will talk about why the heterogeneity within data is important when we go into the results part. Luckily, we want to focus on the maximum precipitation and wind speed, and these two are generally available across all stations. So that's good news. Another thing I want to talk about is there's non-negligible portions of missing data, since, as I said, the observatories, they have closures and they have manual records. So a lot of times the records are not complete. So this is going to be the plot of New South Wales. So the black border is just the New South Wales border. And each little blue point, I make it really small so it's visible, represents a weather observatory that is has existed. So that does not mean they are opening now, but they have some record and they have existed. A general trend you can see is the stations are distributed across New South Wales with a higher concentration along coastal areas. So I am pretty sure this part is around Sydney. One thing that you will see in the results part is this higher concentration of stations will lead to variability since the data itself is heterogeneous. But we will have less data points inland, so there's less weather observatories inland. So a natural question that arises from this graph is, suppose we do use climate data, and then we use our climate data to try to price house building insurance at certain places. So it will be easier if we do it here since we have abundant data. But what happens if we have some house that goes in inner land? So I marked two places. So as you see, they are in the middle of like not many weather stations. So there will be basically no weather observatory data weather station data that is available for pricing. So how would we price it? So another question that is, if there is a new insurer coming to a market, then how would they price such premium or contracts? I would argue that a smooth surface over the whole area would definitely help on these kind of issues. Yep.
Okay, now you pass to me, right? Yep. So we utilize the daily records for total precipitation and the maximum wind speed to do the study. There are two reasons. The first one, these pairs are the two most damaging factors to buildings. The second, there are plenty of data for analysis. So that's why we choose these two for the study. We are concerned about tail risk. So tail risk, because we look at, even in property insurance, we look the house damage, so then the loss will be large. So we consider some catastrophe losses. So these catastrophe losses are driven by individual losses and also tail dependence and so on. So overall, we are concerned about the tail risk. I like to quote two sentences here. The first one, I copy from a paper by Donnelly and Premrix in 2010, published in Esteem, which is a good actuary journal. The devil is in the tails. This was said more than 10 years ago. So second, yesterday, I went to this, it's a parallel session here by Alan Greenfield and so on. So I just quickly pick up this sentence. The sting is in the tail. If you were in the session, there was a beautiful picture there. So the two sentences are very similar. Anyway, that means now I get a clear message. Both academia, the first line, and the industry, the second line, are concerned about tail risk. So we deal with tail risk. Because we are concerned about tail risk, the methodology which comes into play naturally is EVT, extreme value theory. I'm going to convince you EVT will do a very good job here. Next page. So EVT, so univariate EVT, which is usually in standard textbooks, but multivariate EVT is more advanced. But don't worry, I just make it very, very light. So just to show some overall feeling. So let's go to univariate EVT. Let's look at this this picture here. This is just a randomly simulated data from what distribution?
Gamma distribution.
From, let's say, we have here, since we are concerned about tail risk, we don't look at the main body. That means we are worried about the area above the threshold. There's a threshold, dot points, a threshold. Threshold is high enough until the values above which is worrisome. So we are worried about this part. These are called tail risk. Okay, so here this tail risk, it turns out that POT stands for peaks of threshold method. This approach can come up with a parametric model, which we can use to fit these exceedances over high threshold. These thresholds in red. So there's a parametric model. This model is next page. This model is well-known GPD, generalized probability distribution. So the idea is the first bullet point here. For loss X, since we are looking at only large loss, given this loss X is above threshold, U is somehow large, then X minus U, which we denote by Y, is exceedance. This Y is called exceedance over a certain high threshold. This exceedance, Y, which in the previous diagram was in red color, we can safely assume it follows a generalized probability distribution. This distribution is parametric, fully parametric. It's very simple here. HY, this is the first formula. Yeah, was light. First formula, HY, it's a distribution. You see, this distribution, when we do all kinds of statistical analysis, this distribution is very nice. It has two parameters. The first one is KC, which we call shape parameter. Second one is sigma, which we call scale parameter. If we want, we can incorporate location parameter, but that doesn't matter. So here, KC and sigma, it turns out that KC is the most important. KC decides the tail behavior. So the losses we are dealing with, maybe we get a feeling loss is heavy-tailed, or loss is light-tailed, or loss is bounded. Bounded means thin-tailed. So those behaviors are decided by KC, which is a shape parameter. So when KC, or we have data, right, previous page, suppose we have such data, exceedances, we can easily collect such data. Then we have plenty of data to do estimation to fit this parametric distribution. Next page. Then we are able to get a KC, estimated value of KC. Then we know if KC is positive, this hints that the loss we are dealing with are fat-tailed, are large losses, which are worrisome. If KC is around zero, of course, the data will not give you value exactly zero. So subject to certain statistical criteria, KC is around zero, then this means the loss you deal with is not far from exponential distribution, which is light-tailed. If KC is negative, significantly negative, then we know losses are bounded. So KC is a shape parameter, make an important meaning here. Next page.
So I will talk about the clustering. So to be able to fit a GPD that Qihe mentioned before, thanks Qihe for the presentation of the technicals, we need the data themselves to be independent. So the first slide, we simulated independent gamma distribution, so it is automatically satisfied. But in reality, extreme precipitations tend to occur in clusters. So what's clusters? Just imagine if a storm hits, and then there will be several days of very strong precipitation. Then it's unlikely, or I think it's impossible to say these observations are actually independent from each other. So they have a strong temporal dependence within these weather observations. As I said, to be able to fit a GPD, the dependence must be removed since we want the observations to be independent. So declustering is a common practice in dealing with climate data. So I'm going to show you an extract of a real data that we have and demonstrate the declustering method. So this is called the automated declustering scheme. So I will start by talking about declustering, and then I will go to the automated part. So if you see these dots, each represent observation we have in terms of precipitation in millimeters. So clearly, maybe not so clearly, but I would argue it's easy to visualize that we have three clusters. One at the very beginning, one are highlighted in yellow. I will explain why I highlight this in yellow, and one at the end. So we have three clusters, and they do demonstrate a strong temporal dependence, since if you consider the yellow region, one day, the days, they have like very high precipitations. It's unwise to suggest they are independent. All right, so first thing that we need to determine about the GPD distribution is it's a state of art. It's usually a very difficult problem to address, but we assume we have a reasonable threshold that is in red. So thinking about exceedances, if you remember from the first graph, are the red parts above the threshold. So in this graph, they are plotted as the red and green points. So if we just ruthlessly fit a GPD distribution, we would utilize all the points that are highlighted in either red or green. But that's not wise, since we need to remove dependence. So what declustering do is it starts from the highest point, so the highest observation, and then a radius is decided. So the radius is essentially how many days. So I say if I have this observation and then I have a radius of 3 days, then any observation that is within 3 days should be removed. That's a way of removing temporal dependence. So that's highlighted in red. I will mention why this is not 3 days, this is actually 5 days. And then we have this event. So we classify the whole cluster as event. So every observation that falls into the yellow part is considered as a climate extreme event. And hence, we only take one representative of exceedances from each of the climate events. Hence, after doing declustering, so basically we go to this point, we remove everything in the yellow region, and we consider what's the second highest point, which is this red point, and I remove everything that is within a certain region, then the third point. So as you see, after removing all these points, we're left with three independent exceedances. So you might want to think that we are really kind of wasting a lot of data. I want to argue that this is necessary, since we need to be able to comply with the model assumptions to be able to fit a good parametric model, as well as we have more than, for some stations, we do have more than 100 years of data. So we can use the luxury to delete all the dependent data. All right, so that's the declustering scheme. Do you have any questions? Or I hope I'm clear. Thank you.
How did you decide on the three-day decision?
Yeah. Thank you very much for the question, and that's a really good prompt. As I said, I was talking about declustering now. Your question is going to be addressed in the automated part. It is common, so in a lot of like climate research, to assume a raining window is fixed with P. So as I said, this width is like 3 days or 5 days. It's also a state of art, so you think of reasonable ones. So I think for precipitation, reasonable guess is just going to be 3 days. But however, as I said, we have more than 5,000 weather observatories. I want to say that we're not going to use all of them, since they have like a lot of missing data, but we have a lot of data points. And they are spanned across New South Wales. So if we consider the locations and the geographic characteristic, they can differ significantly. So it might be a question whether we should use 3 days for every single weather station. So that's your question. So how do we determine P? It's a state of art, but we argue that we shouldn't be using the same P for all the stations. If you are interested in the literature, I refer to you to a paper by Farrow and Sergis, and if you are interested, we can talk afterwards. But they have introduced a method that gives a P, a reasonable P, depending on the characteristic of each station with a construction of a probability of inter-exceedances times intra-exceedance. So it's called an automated method, since it's easy to compute. It's essentially we're computing a probability, and then we take the order statistics to find this with P.
An alternative approach is many reinsurance contracts are written with 72-hour clauses.
So what they say is you can aggregate losses from an event that occurs over a 72-hour period. And often that's what we would do, because these large losses would get aggregated up and covered by an insurance program. It's not the same statistical thing, but it's what the contract says. But what happens is, right, there is some issues because the insurer has the choice of which 72-hour periods. So you can maximize your insurance recovery by selecting the right periods.
Yeah. Thank you for
it. It would have mattered, because you could have shifted earlier and collect the two peaks and just drop the last point in your yellow period.
Yeah, so it's pretty lucky that 5 days really worked well, and that's the point of the automated declustering scheme, since it chooses wise choices depending on some statistic characteristics that's observed in the data. So we have a specific window for each different set of data. So I can move on. Thank you. So this is the fits. So after I decluster the data, I was able to fit the GPD distribution. I think I should just mention that it's very simple. Basically, we just use the R package, and it should be able to fit a GPD very quickly using MLE or even some other estimators. I don't want to go to details. So the first thing that we fit is the shape parameter. So on the left panel, it's the shape parameter for precipitation, and the right-hand side is the shape parameter for wind speed. So the reason we fit this is we want to kind of using a smooth surface, but a smooth surface of what, right? So Jiko will explain later, we want to use some characteristics of the marginals and some characteristics of the dependence.
So let me jump in here. Yeah. High value of shape parameter means a heavier tail, means more, it means larger losses. Lower value of shape means a smaller tail, a thinner tail, or small losses.
Yeah.
So the color tails, the risk areas.
Thanks, Chihe. So there's two things I really want to talk about here. So the first thing is, there seems to be a general trend, not so clear, but I hope you agree with me that along the coastal area, the shape parameter seems to be a bit higher. And also, why I say the trend is not so clear, this is Sydney, so this highlighted in blue borders. You do see a very big range of different shape parameters. That's one of the motivation on why we want to smooth the surface, since this is potentially caused by the heterogeneity within data. The second observation I want to highlight is quite intuitive. The wind has a lower shape parameter compared to precipitation. So just in layman words, I guess the wind can just go forever, but wind speed usually have a cap. It can't go like very, very extremely wild. So that's the shape parameter, but I want to go to a quite similar plot, but I want to talk about why, since shape parameter is usually quite abstract. We do have three different cases for the shape parameter, but how do you compare a shape parameter of 0.5 to 0.6? It's hard to quantify. Then we want to visualize the 50-year return levels. So the 50-year return level is defined as the level that is exceeded on average. So it's basically expected value. So I refer to the plenary talk, the 1 to 100. It's the same similar idea every 50 years. So this on the left panel is the return level of precipitation. So as you can see, we have a clear trend compared to the shape parameter, with the coastal area have a heavier precipitation in terms of return level. The same is observed across the wind. And I just had a chance to check the actual maximum precipitation in Sydney. It happened in 1986, which is around 328 millimeters. So I would say that, it kind of is modeled already by this red point. As we mentioned before, we want to kind of have a smooth surface, smooth pricing surface, which is still in the work. But we use the RINLE package, so it's a package in R. which allows for the smoothing of the surfaces. There's two benefits of using this package. First, it's very efficient. There's a lot of stations, and the computational cost of fitting a smooth surface among all these stations is quite heavy. So the INLA is a Bayesian approach that does the job quite efficiently, so I can run this code very quickly. This is just a sample study, but this can be run under 1 minute, so that's good to know. The second thing is the INLA is a Bayesian approach, so if we have some actuarial common sense, we can feed it into the model fitting. So to link the model towards one side or the other, depending on what you want. So as you can see, after using the RNLA smoothing approach, the message is much clearer. So we do, especially in the Sydney region, as I said, there's a lot of stations and variability, but the variability reduces significantly. And also the trend that on the lower southern coast of New South Wales being having a heavy tail is more clear compared to the previous graph. Similarly to the return level, so we still see a stronger return level, a heavier rain prediction on the coastal area, but there seems to be a little bit difference between shape or return level. So that's some work to do. Should we use the shape parameter for premium making, or should we use the return level? It's ongoing work, so we can investigate on that. But I want to stress that these two are characteristics from the marginal distribution that can be used.
Okay, now let's move to multivariate EVT, next page. So large losses, we are concerned about tail risk. Large losses are due to two reasons. The first one, individual losses, individual risk factors. So every individual risk factor will drive. But the other thing, which usually are overlooked is here tail dependence, the dependence between these risk factors. Actually, this causes we call compounding effect. So in climate change now, it's become a popular word, compound event. So compound event is essentially driven by tail dependence. So here, individual risk factors are very well studied based on univariate EVT, but the tail dependence is largely overlooked. So from this point of view here, tail dependence here is much harder to perceive and quantify than individual risk factors. What is a multivariate EVT? If we want to consider, we want to model compounding effect, multivariate EVT become useful here. It's a bit more technical, but simply put, multivariate EVT means univariate EVT plus tail dependence. So that's a multivariate EVT. Formulas can be a bit more complicated. So insurance pricing should take account of both the individual tail risks and their tail dependence. This is the message we like to send out. So again, tail dependence is largely overlooked in study. Of course, because it's harder to perceive and quantify. Next page. So this is the second and the last formula in our slides. So up tail dependence coefficient. Chi, we have two losses, X and Y. They have distributions F and G, respectively. Then this chi is defined this way. So the event behind this vertical line means condition. This condition means Y is large already. The event we consider probability is about X. So such a conditional probability means the probability that large loss of Y drives up the large values of X. So one becomes large, the other one consequently becomes large. Such a situation is measured by such a quantity, chi. So this chi actually is just a property of a copula, if we know what is a copula. So I pick up three very typical copulas, Gumbel, Clayton, and Frank. We only look at the upper right corner. We can also do left lower corner, but only we look at the upper right corner because we consider tail risks. Gumbel copula shows a shrinkage in the upper right corner. That means the Gumbel copula does show upper tail dependence. Clayton copula shows no shrinkage. Clayton copula shows tail independence. Frank copula also shows tail independence. Next page.
Yes, so this is the data we have from one of the weather observatories. The first thing is we want to look, so rather than looking at the whole scatter plot, so the scatter plot is a pair of wind and precipitation observations. I want to let you focus on the top right corner, since that's where the joint extreme event happens. So prior to making this, you see the scale is from 0 to 1, since basically what we have done is we fit the empirical distribution, so they have this, we're basically plotting the joint CDFs rather than the actual observations. And there does seem like a clustering effect on the very top right corner. I would argue this effect, we do observe a positive tail dependence. However, it is actually a little bit moderate rather than very extreme. Maybe some of you might think they often happen at the same time, but yeah, it's only moderate. So this is the plot of the tail dependence. So we basically computed the quantity of chi at each of the single stations. So these three stations, they actually demonstrate independence. So they have a chi of zero. On the other stations, we see the chi value is actually between 0.1 to 0.3, which kind of makes sense since there are many windy days, but there's no precipitation. Hence, I was actually a bit surprised. I would think chi would be much higher, but it turns out the chi is not so high. But it still does demonstrate some trend. Instead of being focused on a coastal area, this time we see the inner land has a higher chi. So this can be useful for future investigations. And yeah, so this right-hand side is just a smooth tail dependence. It's already pretty clear that the pattern is shown very clearly on the right-hand side. So sometimes we need to justify whether we should smooth it. And I also want to talk about this one limitation about the smoothing procedure. It requires professional actuarial justification, since one of the parameters is the range. And if we have a higher range, the surface is going to be extremely smooth, so everything goes to the mean. If we have a very small range, then everything is going to be very localized. So if the range is zero, we basically have the observations themselves. One of the statistical solutions is to use cross-validation, but it kind of requires professional actuarial judgment.
So the message of that page means precipitation and wind speed shows the tail dependence by Lao Shi Zhuang. Now let's go to takeaways. So we propose to use climate data to improve insurance pricing practice. This is the first. The second, the approach we propose here is smooth the surface, which can help mitigate the ridging issue. Next takeaway, insurance pricing should take account of both individual tail risks and the tail dependence. Finally, EVT does a good job here. Thank you very much. So I'd like to, before we end, please.
So I just wanted to clarify that thing about climate not being part of pricing. I mean, it really is a definitional issue. So insurers do price for weather events. They do price for storms. They do price for that. There's a lot of models out there. And that's weather like today. And the statistics you've used, I presume, are current weather statistics. I think the contrast here is thinking about climate data, where we think about how these would change over time under future climate conditions. And that's not priced for the simple reason that you're pricing a 12-month contract. So you don't really care what's going to happen 5 to 10 years down the line.
Future climate events.
So I would say that actually insurers do spend a lot of time modeling storm losses and precipitation and wind losses, but what they don't do is look at how climate will change out in the future when they're pricing for today. So,
Thank you very much, Xiaoranji, for this clarification. So here, before we end, I'd like to say we as academic, we really very much looking forward to your collaboration for your comments and so on. If you can show us a question, I can organize highly capable students like Maurice to work to give you some quantitative answers. So in USW, university and our faculty strongly encourages such linkage research. I look forward to your further comments afterwards. Let's hope to keep in touch.
All right. So I guess that brings us to the end of time. Is there one burning question from the audience? Because we're between us and lunch. Any questions left for Maurice and Chiyo? If not, let's wrap it up. Give them a little applause.
Thank you. Thank you very much.